Salutations, Mets fans. Welcome to this week's edition. For all you kids out there, a baseball prospectus, Mets adjacent podcast. Be very adjacent this week. I'm your host, Jeffrey Paternostro. With me once again is Jarrett Seidler. Jarrett, I feel like drunker than when I started last week's show, which was the BP.
Right.
Yeah, it's good. But we have to, I think, dive right into very Mets adjacent news. Henry Mejia got a minor league contract with the Boston Red Sox. It's not an official NRI. They're going to take him in like their version of step camp or whatever and see what they have there. But I'm very excited because I am going to be in Rochester the last weekend of April for a bowling tournament. And Pawtucket's in town. I might get a Henry Mejia JV1 encounter. I guess is the best way to put that.
They were like buddies, right?
Who they played on the same team in Dominican Winter League.
Yeah.
I don't think how much more you can read into that than that, but that's really up to you.
I mean, I'm going to read a lot into it because yeah, that's I fine. Want to. Yeah.
He can absolutely make that Red Sox bullpen out of spring training.
So that Red Sox bullpen is essentially fire. They're just refusing to add anybody.
They have not added anyone, which I think we'll get into. We talk about general free agent club. I'm going to fire up the old, our old companion, the roster resource pages that we have regularly. All right, here's their bullpen. Their closer by committee is currently listed as Ryan Brazier and Matt Barnes.
Matt Barnes, who's extremely Matt Barnes, and yeah. Ryan Brazier, who they brought back from a foreign league in the middle of last season.
A foreign minor league, yes. The rest of the bullpen is Heath Hembree, Tyler Thornburg, Brandon Workman, Brian Johnson, and Hester Velasquez.
I feel like a really good AAA bullpen.
It is. Henry Mejia can absolutely make that bullpen out of...
Henry Mejia could be the closer by June 10th.
Also true.
I mean, let's call a spade here.
Yeah, yeah.
He could be the closer here.
He could be. I'm excited.
Probably not.
Probably not. I don't know what to expect here. Excellent job by his agent to put them there.
Why wouldn't you just sign like Fernando Rodney to close or something?
Why don't you just sign Craig Kimbrell?
Yeah, but like all these relievers are going for like nothing.
They could have brought in Andrew Miller, like
2 year $8 million, 2 year $10 million, 1 year $3.5 million.
Brad Brock would be the best reliever in this bullpen, probably.
Right, like what?
1 year $3 million, yeah. Mm. It might be Henry Mejia, $650K.
Yeah,
split deal. Wild. Absolutely wild.
It's supposedly starring well in the Dominican.
I'm just very excited at the possibility that I can bookend. I don't know if I'll end up in Portland or Pawtucket, but possibly that I can bookend the 2013 when I went nuts on Amazing Avenue Audio about his rehab start. Sounds about right.
2013. I think it was 2012.
I wasn't doing the podcast in 2012, so it would have been 2013. That August, yeah. Where he was throwing like 4+ major league pitches. It's great.
Yeah. It was
13. Yeah, it's exciting. It's great. I said a lot of things on that podcast, which, to be fair, I still actually believe.
That's
because I saw it.
Fair.
It was great. And then he took a lot of drugs. I don't even say allegedly because he popped three times.
It was Binghamton at New Britain.
Yes.
Yes. It was on July 20th.
Yeah.
He gave up one run and struck out 8 over 6 innings.
Yeah. It was very, very good. I remember it well. Yeah. Four pitches, fastball, cutter, slider, curve. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Henry Mejia experience. It's like one of those starts that just like, so we talk a lot about it sort of, I think, in the prospect world about what's possible, what you can project. And, like, watching that dude, I think I wrote it at Amazing Avenue, like, that was number two starter stuff.
And he threw like that when he came out to the majors.
He did, briefly, yeah.
Until he got hurt again. It was, like, 5 starts.
Yeah, but... no, I know. Trust me, it's like, and again, it's what is possible.
Yeah.
And like even when he was pitching as their closer, it's like a four pitch closer, like sort of like the Jeff Montgomery mode. Like it was very good.
Yeah.
All of it was very good. Like the again, we talked about the aesthetic. The aesthetics were excellent for starters.
Yeah, I mean the aesthetics of Henry here have always been fantastic.
I don't have a recent like update on the hair situation, but I'm very excited to see that in
Fort Myers.
Yeah.
I could probably
let it flow, man. Let it flow.
Yeah.
I guess the only Mets news of the week is that a good friend of ours, Russell Carlton, is now
former guest on this very podcast.
He was, yes. We had him on a couple of years ago.
Yeah, we had him a couple of years ago to talk about minor league baseball pay and assorted other stuff.
Hiring in professional baseball and such things. And he was hired by the Mets.
Yeah. I mean, Russell is...
Probably the most brilliant public mind writing and thinking about baseball. If not, he's certainly in the top five.
I would say he's the most... the way I phrased it on Twitter in a reply to somebody is that if I suddenly inherited $2 billion and bought a baseball team, he would have been the first guy hired.
Right. So if you've read The Only Rule Is It Has to Work, which I assume many of our listeners have.
Yes.
You know, Russell is a prominent figure within that book. He wrote his own book, The Shift.
Right, I mean, that's basically what Sam, that's basically what Sam did.
When he
got control. Yeah, to stop. So, and, you know, Russell also has his own book, which, you know, if you're interested to hear the type of stuff that he's going to be proposing, that it's a very good book, and it's, you know, a lot of it is going to be specifically applicable to what my understanding is of what he's doing with them.
Sure.
So, congratulations to Russell. This is not Russell worked for the Indians some years ago. This is not his first to go around.
If Ahmed Rosario is suddenly 25 runs better by DRS next year, you might have a indication of why that might be.
You know, Russell has a very good, and he also has a very different perspective than in a lot of like the sabermetric community. He's not going. You know, a lot of us and a lot of them, you know, kind of think we're trained to think exactly the same, and Russell has always never thought that way,
right?
Which is good. You want some of those people, but if you're, especially if you're trying to get advantages and don't have an existing infrastructure, one of the things you would do is to start bringing in people to think about how can we do things that no other team is doing yet. Yeah. Because you're not going to catch up to the Astros anytime within like the next 5 years. You're just not.
No. You are not. Jarrett, we're 8 minutes into the show, and that's about it for news.
I mean, there's, you know, the Whit Merrifield extension.
Yeah.
You know.
I mean, it's February 3rd.
This just,
it's February 3rd. The Whit 3rd. Merrifield
extension can become a springboard into other topics. So
It's February 3rd. There are 100 free agents haven't signed, including four of the top five free agents, Harper, Machado, Keuchel, and Craig Kimbrell.
Yeah.
It's February 3rd. Like, literally, baseball starts roughly in the next... There'll be pitcher, fielding, practice, drill photos in your Twitter feed in the next couple of weeks.
A lot of guys have already reported and started working out and throwing on the side. Like, you know...
Our main man, Todd Frazier, is down there.
Yeah. Like, you know, a common thing teams do now, or a common thing a lot of players do is, like, report, like, the last week in January, the first week in February.
Including the minor leaguers that aren't getting paid for it by law. Yeah. That's great. It's happening in Arizona right now. Very excited for that.
So Whit Merrifield.
Whit Merrifield, yes. Yeah.
Guaranteed him. And Whit Merrifield is like a top 50 player in baseball now. Something like that.
Sure.
But Whit Merrifield was a ninth round, I believe, senior sign.
It's extremely, the profile is extremely Jeff McNeil, as we've discussed.
Right. Whit Merrifield is basically Jeff McNeil 2 years from now.
Yeah.
If things go really well for Jeff McNeil. Whit Merrifield is like the high end six Jeff McNeil.
Yeah.
So Whit Merrifield signed an extension that guarantees him $16.25 million.
Yeah.
And he is 30 years old. He just turned 30. He signed the extension right after his 30th birthday. But he was still making the league minimum this year.
He was.
And, you know, there was a lot of criticism of Whit Merrifield personally for signing this deal. But Whit Merrifield is 30 years old. Whit Merrifield has not made any money yet. And Whit Merrifield, had he played out this string, you know, yeah, he would have beaten the $16 million in arbitration, probably.
But not significantly.
But not if he blew out his knee and not by a ton. And yeah, he gave them a team option. But what is a 30? But look at what, like, Brian Dozier is getting. What was a 34-year-old Whit Merrifield getting on the open market anyway? Like,
yes, it's a good system. All of this is a good system. So
you shouldn't be yelling at Whit Merrifield. You should be yelling at the system, because the system is what's causing this. And you know, you see it all over. But this is the secondary squeeze.
Right. This is not a deal I'm gonna make a big deal about. It's like, there are dudes that probably should, like Brian LaHare should have signed this contract if it was offered to him. Like, it's that kind of like.
Whit Merrifield's a little more established and better.
It's a little more established, a little more positional flexibility, a little more athletic. It's like the corner guy doesn't really work. But, like, you could have argued Brian Dozier should have signed that deal if it was.
Brian Dozier signed a form of that deal.
Yeah. But we sit here on February 3rd, and Harper hasn't signed, Machado hasn't signed. Pitchers and catchers are reporting in a week or two, and it's a dumb fucking system.
So here's, you know, DJ LeMahieu.
Yeah.
Over his 3 years of arbitration. Pretty similar player to Whit Merrifield, except he had the batting champion year.
Yeah.
Made $16 million. Right. So basically what Merrifield's making. And then DJ LeMahieu hits the open market, gets 2-24. So how valuable is that year that Merrifield really gave up? And LeMahieu hit the market at 30, got 2-24, and half the internet complained it was too much money.
Right. It's all messed up.
Right. So we're getting to the point where the fact that these guys' free agencies are dragging on is going to start impacting their preparation for the season.
Right. So the thing that happened last year.
It's happened.
You know, I think with Lance Lynn and Alex Cobb, I feel like it's
Jake Arrieta
more
bit.
Of a thing for pitchers than it is for hitters. I have no.
Neil Walker said it was a major factor in a slow start. It was one of the reasons he signed, because he signed this week with the Marlins. He basically. You know, he said after he signed, paraphrasing some here, but he didn't, he thought that it would be more harmful to him. He thought he could have gotten more money if he held out into spring, but he thought it might tank his career again if he did that.
Yeah. It's just, I mean, there's an overarching issue here where it's just that teams are not trying to win baseball games, essentially. They're trying to increase ROI.
I want to stipulate something here. I don't. The individual, the members of the team, the manager, the general manager, are mostly trying to win baseball games. Although as you get higher, it gets less. As you get higher, it gets less.
Yes and no here.
Ownership is implementing team ownership, team presidents, team baseball operations heads, and some of those cross over with general managers. Some of them don't. They're the ones that are implementing this strategy where, it would be nice if we won baseball games, but who really gives a fuck if we win baseball games as long as our profit margins stay high? That's the secondary motivation now, not the primary one.
Right. We both have corporate day jobs, and I made this, this was like 3 or 4 years ago, I feel like, in my DMs with Howard, where I made a joke about, you know, rooting for corporations, but essentially.
Oh no! You revealed that we both talked to Howard privately.
And whatever. But it is very much like you're still. It's like you. But he gave me, you got to believe in corporations. You got to believe, and it's like that's what it is. And the Mets, in some ways, are one of the last bastions of not being a gigantic hedge fund running your baseball team.
Yeah, they're just real estate guys who aren't very good at it.
Yeah, so it's a, the devil you know versus the devil you don't in a lot of cases. We look at what, like what the Braves have done or the
My
Cubs
brain's
recently, and
Yeah.
it's like there's a lot of winnable divisions in baseball right now. Like, what would you say? Is there any division that's not particularly winnable? I don't feel like there is.
Maybe the AL West.
Maybe the AL West,
Because I
but
got
Artie
just because
Moreno can wake up tomorrow and sign both Harper and Machado if he wants to.
I got to update my mute lists this week
Yeah, I'm sure you did.
because this was a discussion that came up, and I pointed out that a team that was in the middle of their contention cycle
Yeah.
and is
Was it
cutting
the
payroll,
Rays?
a team, the Astros are a team in the middle of their contention
Yeah.
cycle, letting major players walk and cutting
Yeah.
payroll. And they're doing that because they have assessed that their percentage of winning the World Series goes up by less economically by signing those players
Right,
than it
because
is the surplus value of pitching, Brad Peacock instead of re-signing Dallas Keuchel.
The Mariners have obviously decided to go into a tank, and the Angels are kind of a mess, and the A's, like, maybe they'll do that again. It's possible, but can you name, I think we did this on the show before, can you name the five Athletic starting pitchers for 2019?
Oh, God, no.
That's a, I'll pull up the A's roster resource page.
Oh, God, no. Yeah, but now they're
Hang on,
not.
I feel like we've already done this on the
Now,
show, but we're gonna do it again. We're gonna do it again, Jarrett. It's fine.
the reverse side of this is it's very easy to 2018 Cubs yourself here. But at the same time, what.
Oh my God, do you know who the SP the starting pitcher the starting pitcher one on the A's is on roster resource?
I don't have the slightest idea.
Mike Fiers.
Sure.
It's Mike Fiers, Marco Estrada, Daniel Megden, Frankie Montas, and Chris Bassett. That is fucking, it's a very good bullpen. Like, so in their bullpen is Yusmeiro Petit. I feel like Yusmeiro Petit as a starter is better than at least three of those dudes.
So Houston is better than even money to win the AL West right
Right,
now,
so that's
probably.
like, we'll roll
So
it
you
back
might
in.
improve if you sign Dallas Keuchel, you might improve your odds of winning the AL West. I'm making these numbers up from 60% to 63% or 66%.
But at the cost of signing Dallas
A lot
Keuchel,
of money.
yeah,
Yeah.
fucking amazing.
And
Yusmeiro
they have
Petit, game three starter, baby.
Right, and they have substantially sold their fan base that we just don't need these guys. The guys that are coming are fill-in. But you're not replacing Dallas Keuchel with Forrest Whitley because you're not calling Forrest Whitley up before the first week in June because you don't want to pay Forrest Whitley either.
The Houston Astros
So
roster.
instead of calling up Forrest Whitley, who's probably the third or fourth best starter available to them, they go out and they sign Wade Miley. Now
Wade Miley, yeah.
we are aesthetic fans of Wade Miley on this
You more than
podcast.
me, but sure.
We would have enjoyed Wade Miley being the fifth starter on the Mets.
Wade Miley slots right into the SP3 there behind Verlander and Cole,
He's
along
now
with like with Colin
the third
McHugh and.
starter on what is putatively the second best team in baseball.
So their rotation, as listed on roster resource right now,
I
is
could knock it.
Verlander, Cole, Miley, McHugh, Josh James.
It's good rotation.
Maybe. And you have
All of
Forrest
a sudden,
Whitley.
but you put Charlie Morton or Dallas Keuchel in that rotation for
Meh.
McHugh, and it strengthens your rotation because they're better starting pitchers than McHugh. It strengthens your bullpen because McHugh's a better reliever than
Yeah.
whoever, Framber Valdez or whoever's going to be. Whatever spot in the
Hector
bullpen that is.
Rondon,
And again,
Leonel Perez.
we're aesthetic fans of Framber Valdez on this
Oh
podcast.
yeah, sure. You got Rogelio too.
Right.
JBB, Forrest Whitley. They have a fair amount of starting pitching depth. Tyler
Right.
Ivey, all these dudes you're gonna write up for the Astros list for me.
Right. But that's the argument to sign Dallas Keuchel instead of signing
Right.
Wade Miley, because you already have the Wade Miley guys, but Wade Miley performs the important service for only $4.5 million.
And like, now if you
manipulate everybody else's service time.
The other thing too is if you perform 5 games under your 98-win projection versus your 94-win projection, it makes a huge difference.
That's what the Cubs did.
Yeah.
Last year.
So. Like, try to put yourself into a position to win as many baseball games as possible is what you should be doing, as if you're running things as a baseball team and not a hedge fund. But everyone's running things as a hedge fund now, so this is where we are. And
I mean, and the Astros were right at the, you know, the Astros are owned by, you know, James Robert Crane is a businessman from Houston, Texas, the chief executive and chairman of Crane Capital Group.
Yeah.
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 Hedge fund dude.
Yeah.
It's a Democratic hedge fund dude, which means he plays golf with Obama instead of Trump, but he's hedge fund dude.
Yeah, it's all, and it's just like, at a certain point, this may happen in our lifetime and it may not, like, the cable bubble is going to burst on them. Because the reason they can get away with this is that attendance and performance on the field is not as directly correlated with revenue as it used to be. And our, like, look, I lived through Sabre 1.0 as you did. We're both in our mid-30s now, so we're very familiar with the, you know, the Joe Sheehan, Randy Gisarelli, Will Carroll era of all of this stuff. Uh-huh. That says you... It does not say you should not sign Manny Machado, to be clear. It says you shouldn't sign Gary Matthews Jr.,
it kind of does say you shouldn't sign Manny Machado, though.
Yeah, it doesn't. It doesn't. It's a thing. Like, our good friend Alex Rosen, who took us very literally when we said this was a Phillies prospect podcast, and now
Philadelphia Phillies amateur scout Alex Rosen
did a little research for me. Not personally, he just did it for fun.
Yeah,
while he's still in college. Basically found that the free agent market right now is paying about $4 million per win, which is about half of what it should be paying.
He did this before the Phillies hired him.
He did this before the Phillies hired him.
Just to say, in case, because it is entirely possible.
If anyone from the Philly system, Alex is great, you should not. Yeah. He signed his contract, it's fine.
Yeah.
But like, there is no scenario where Manny Machado signs for, like, less than $400 million and probably doesn't return market value, short of a crazy injury that, it's like...
But if he has the crazy, you're going to insure it. Insure it
anyway, yeah.
Anyways,
so the chicken puppet, who we both know well,
yeah,
did a bunch of tweets recently about, like, what these best teams in baseball will look like. They just signed Harper and Machado. Say $35 million a year for both. $70 million to your payroll, plus whatever the luxury tax might afford you. And it's fucking insane, man.
You know, the Mets, if they wanted.
Yeah. Like, we love Jeff McNeil, clearly, on this podcast. Me, personally, going back several years. Jarrett going the last 9 to 12 months or so. Love fucking Jeff McNeil. They sign Harper and Machado. Jeff McNeil shouldn't be sniffing the field.
Right, and then you can package Ahmed Rosario and Jeff McNeil and get a cost-controlled top-of-the-rotation starter for that.
You can probably go out and get, I don't know, let's say... cost-controlled...
All of a sudden, your lineup could be Brandon Nimmo, Jed Lowry, Bryce Harper, Manny Machado, Michael Conforto, Robinson Cano. Robinson Cano hitting six.
Yeah.
We're talking.
Peter Alonso.
Robinson Cano, Peter Alonso. Who did I forget? Wilson Ramos.
Yeah.
That lineup's going to score 1,100 runs.
It doesn't suck.
Right. And behind that, you would still have whoever you would stop Todd Frazier to fill in.
Yeah, Todd Frazier.
You would stop Travis d'Arnaud to fill in if Ramos gets hurt. You still got your J.D. Davis. You still got Keon Broxton. If you want to keep McNeil, you can still find the bats for McNeil.
These are all things that are possible.
And you could move Ahmed Rosario for a potential top of the rotation pitcher, because you would get that if you moved Ahmed Rosario.
And you got Andrés Giménez and waiting in the wings anyway.
I don't know exactly who do you get, but you get some, and you could get other stuff if you wanted to. Yeah. But based on the construction of the team, you would want to go get the top rotation start.
These are all things that are possible, but here we are on February 3rd, and man.
And instead, we've got the Padres pussyfooting around for the 29th time this offseason.
They signed Ian Kinsler. It's the one thing they've done.
They had an informal meeting with Bryce Harper, and they're talking to Manny Machado and Dallas Keuchel too. And the JT Realmuto's talks are hot again for Jonathan India and Tucker Barnhart. So we've come back to reality now.
Jonathan India, clearly the fourth best prospect in the Red system. I enjoyed that a lot this week.
People are really high on Hunter Green.
Hunter Green throws 103 dead straight and has a bad elbow and no second pitch.
No third pitch. A slider is fine.
1.5 pitches.
Yeah, I mean, it's a high risk. On upside, he's better than India.
If you knew Hunter Green was only a pitcher, does he go second overall in that draft?
Almost.
Yeah.
Won the second best prospect.
No, Joe Adell and Keston Hira both got drafted behind him, among others.
But he also wasn't really probably the same. Brendan McKay was probably the better prospect at the time.
These are all things that I generally agree with. The Mets. We have any other Mets stuff? Brody Van Wagenen looked good in the cage. Stanford swing still there in the early 40s.
Yeah, I mean, there was like no loft to the swing at all.
He's got a bad swing.
Right, he would fit in fine in like a high A lineup.
I would like to see Brody Van Wagenen in like, obviously Tebow got a minor league invite, but I'd like to see a major league invite. I see Brody Van Wagenen.
Yeah,
it was sticking in there on occasion. Yeah, why not?
If you ever want to know what the Stanford swing is,
get Brody Van Wagenen.
Just look at that, because he was basically punching the ball down.
Yeah, it's extremely chopped down. Yeah.
Yeah, which is, punch the ball down and out. Brody Van Wagenen accepted an invite to sit with the 7-9 Army.
I mean, it's just, he knows the... So, the thing with this...
It's a good cop, bad cop routine, and he's a good cop.
Yeah, you've got to... Like, the proof has to be in the pudding eventually. But the good PR always helps. Like, he's very good at marketing himself, which is, like, frankly, for a GM in a major market, it's not a bad skill to have. Sandy had it in a weird way, but his, like, situation was a little different.
Sandy had it for a period of time, but eventually he lost the credibility, because that was what he had, was the credibility, and I would say probably by 2017 the credibility was gone. We're not saying that the credit.
Right. Yeah, but like for that kind of like stuff.
Media and fan perception of Sandy once it got to a certain point was that he was not,
I assume that Brody Van Wagenen is going to be very, very good at the BP day at Citi Field this year.
I mean, I don't know.
I suspect we're going to do it, and I suspect he's going to be.
I don't know.
Very. I have no inside information here. But I suspect that if he does it, he's going to be very, very good.
He feels like somebody that would do that. Mm. Do that kind of event. They've done some good things.
Sure. I saw the most recent projection that had them like at like 87.5 wins behind the Nationals and close to the Braves, which feels about
around
right.
Where,
so
round we're gonna have them too.
Yeah, it's fine.
I mean, Coda's not ready to go yet, but that's around where they've been on most of the runs that I've seen.
Yeah. And it's like, look, this should be, and we talked about this, I think, with David a little bit a couple weeks ago. It's like, this should be a fun, like, what are you, like, so this is a Mets adjacent podcast. And they've we had, should be generally excited about this. Like, I feel like I should be more excited about this Mets season than I am, is the thing.
So here's the reason why.
No. Enlighten
They'd me. Have had a great, fantastic offseason if this free agency class didn't include Harper and Machado, and you know that it includes Harper and Machado, and you're reminded that, constantly yes. that it includes Harper and Machado.
Yeah, and there are two, like, clear holes in the offense right now. Like, I mean, you could have reshaped this roster while going up to the, not even really that close to the CBT, although they're definitely already pushing out those numbers. Like, oh, we're only 25 million of the CBT. Yeah, you keep structuring your contracts weirdly for some reason. I don't know why that is. But yeah, so like Harper, like Jarrett and I can have our discussion about what we think. Ah, Nemo can play center field or Conforto can play center field. You sign Bryce Harper, who fucking gives a shit? Sign Manny Machado, who fucking gives a shit if Amed Rosario hits this year or not? Amed Rosario might hit 250, 320, 370. And that's not like a, but it's like the options for upgrades were out there. And the rest of the division clearly, despite the Phillies' protestations about their stupid money, are not spending any of the money, smart or stupidly otherwise. Like, you can put a cap on this division. It's very winnable right now. And they might still win it anyway, but...
But here we are on February 3rd, and
Juan Lagares might be the starting center fielder.
And Phillies' Twitter, which apparently hates me again...
It's an ebb and flow. It's like it is with all things.
But they're still playing. It's going to happen. Wait and see. It's going to happen. Wait and see. It's going to happen. Yeah, wait and see. We're a World Series contender.
Yeah.
The fuck you are? Like, if you were a real World Series contender, you would have fucking signed Harper and Machado in December. Yeah. You might end up backing into one of them.
Yeah.
If they get cheap enough. But that's not a plan. That's, you know, that's they've got to sign somewhere.
Yeah. Here we are, my man. It says a week or so from pitchers and catchers, and I'm...
The stupidest fucking thing I've seen recently.
Several drinks into the afternoon.
The stupidest thing I've seen recently is the idea that Machado should take a one-year deal and try again next year. Machado is coming off of his best season.
Harper should take a one-year deal if he's going to go.
He's had knee problems in the past,
yeah.
And he wasn't qualified this season. So if he takes a one-year deal, he's getting qualified next season.
I mean, no one should care about the QO, but here we are. Right, I love this. So my favorite, I want to be clear.
Next offseason, the QO becomes the reason not to give him the money.
My favorite thing was the idea that, like, Nolan Arenado is not going to re-sign with the Rockies, or is going to re-sign with the Rockies because they now have a parameter for a multi-year deal. Like, the Rockies aren't giving him $300 million. If I'm Nolan Arenado, I'm going to test the market because there's nobody else in the market.
He's going to wait and see what Harper Machado gets.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But there'll be a reason not to sign Arenado. There'll be a reason not to sign Mike Trout in 2020 or Mookie Betts. And here we are.
And in 5 years, there's going to be a reason not to sign Shohei Ohtani, too, right?
And a reason not to sign Francisco Lindor.
Tommy John surgery at the end of 2019.
Yeah.
Can't sign a pitcher more than 5 years when he's had Tommy John surgery.
Bless everyone that is currently carrying water for Major League ownership. They're not going to hire you, just to be clear. They're not going to hire us, but they're not going to hire you either.
They're not going to hire you because you're carrying water.
No. They got plenty of people that can do that coming out of Dartmouth or wherever that are better in R than you are anyway. Is that a good place to end the first half of the show, Jarrett?
Yeah, before we get into too much work trouble.
Yeah, too much trouble. So we'll come back. There'll be some emails, which will develop some wrestling stuff. And, yeah,
this will be a short podcast because I want to go watch the Super Bowl. So.
Need to watch the Super Bowl. I need to write up some prospects. It's the usual stuff here on For All You Kids Out There. Welcome back. Now it's time to do housekeeping, because it's the second slash third half of the show. Before we do that, we do housekeeping. Episode 147 for all you kids out there. For all you kids out there is a Mets adjacent, as I'm sure you could tell from the first half of the show, baseball prospectus podcast. We are on the internet at baseballprospectus.com. The podcast is on iTunes. Just search for all you kids out there. You can listen or subscribe right there. I encourage you to do both. I also encourage you to rate and review the podcast. If you want to get in contact with the show, we're on Twitter at For All You Kids. Jarrett's on Twitter at J.A. Seidler. I'm on Twitter at Jeff Paternostro. We have a Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/For All You Kids Out There. And you can email the show at allyoukids@baseballprospectus.com. Jarrett, the BP annual is shipping within the next week or so.
Not already shipped.
Already shipping? Already shipping the baseball
prospectus. It's already shipping. It shipped on Friday. It should have shipped on Friday or Saturday. If you ordered it on Amazon.
There's a shipping notification in your email inbox right now, apparently.
Yeah. It should be. Well, I think it shipped from the publisher to Amazon. So I think there's another step in there.
It should be
available within the next week or two.
In your hot little hands. So I encourage you to also. Order the Baseball Prospectus Annual. You can read my and Jarrett's 101 comments, Jarrett's Houston Astros comments. It's all good. There's a lot of good shit in there, Jarrett.
Yes. The writing was good.
You were very happy. You, unsolicited, said that the 101 is the best we've done so far.
Yeah, I thought it was the best out of the three that we've been the primary authors of. Yeah.
So hopefully you, the listener, will agree with that. Do we have anything else?
Nothing.
Do you want to get right into the wrestling?
Do we have any other correspondence? Or
I think it was just our good friend the Googs was the only correspondence for the week.
So this will be an obvious springboard into.
I guess we should. Should we hype the prospect writing solicitation?
Yeah, we should do that, right? So we posted on Thursday, we are looking for staff writers.
We are.
We are not necessarily looking for people with fantastical amounts of experience. If you're interested in prospects, if you can compile good clips, if you write well, and, we will consider you strongly. We are especially looking for people from less advantaged backgrounds, women, non-binary folks, LGBT community, persons of color, certainly. So we're not, we're trying to expand outside of the 35-year-old white dude stereotype if we can.
The two people on the show, yeah.
Not just because we want to, it's because we think that people, we want to get some different perspectives in. Because, Jeffrey and I do have pretty similar backgrounds and philosophies. And so there's a lot of our.
Someone posted something that thought you were, it's not actually a question. But we did have a question about it that amused me greatly. Oh, it's because I said, I posted something on the Facebook group about new to podcast choose a genre, and I said,
I already answered that in the Facebook group. Yeah.
So I disclaimed that we were seemingly normal adults, and David pointed out that, not David Roth, a different David, that I work insurance, which I do, and Jarrett is in the law field, which is not so much.
I used to be.
Yeah, sure. You have a law degree, and you still are barred in the state of New Jersey.
So. I practice for a bit,
But yes, you don't need to hear from us about a lot of these issues. You just don't.
Right, we're two guys in our mid-30s with corporate desk jobs.
Yes, that's a good way to put it.
So, you know, if you find prospects interesting, you think you can write pretty well.
If you live in Florida and Arizona specifically.
If, I'm going to throw this out there. I'm going to say if you even know anybody. We would like to add Dominican Republic coverage, and we have literally no idea how to. Like, I don't even know who to talk to on this.
Yeah.
So if you even have ideas on that, talk to us.
Instead, we're going to take a wrestling question, Jared.
Yeah.
From our friend John Googs. The other day, I mentioned to a friend that Becky Lynch is the biggest star in professional wrestling, which felt right and good at the time. But with some time to think about it, I find myself wondering, is she? Also, does that even mean anything? Even if you get rid of the people who used wrestling to become famous and might come back every now and then, The Rock, Dave Bautista, and the people who swear up and down they're not in the category, but at the same time are totally in that category, John Cena, I'm still left with the thought that Becky might not matter to the non-wrestling fan. To professional wrestling fans, Becky Lynch is a big deal, as she should be, because she's great. But to the public at large, is she moving the needle at all? Does a person who knew the big stars in the 90s and might watch WrestleMania most years even know who Becky Lynch is?
So the Ronda Rousey angle before Survivor Series actually crossed over.
Sure. So my...
Like, that was a big deal. That was pop culture. My usual touchstone for this is when Kate Feldman texts me asking who a wrestler is, and that's happened repeatedly with Becky Lynch, and she now knows who Becky Lynch is.
My general overarching point here is going to be that you have to understand that since the 90s, the cable and general television market in general has fractured so much that while the WWE ratings are down probably 62-thirds since the peak of the Attitude Era, probably more than that, really.
Yeah, it's like 80% now.
They still got a billion-dollar deal from Fox.
Right, but that's because the perception of who watches wrestling has greatly changed. Yeah.
But I'm saying the TV market in general has fractured so much that it's not like, you know, I'm like aware of a bunch of like Netflix shows that are probably watched by like 500,000 people.
Yeah.
But it's like in the cultural consciousness in a way that, like, you know, the best thing that happened to professional wrestling is that I got picked up by the AV Club. At the Onion, really, in a lot of ways.
Now, so there's a lot of different ways to look at this. Over the last 3 months, there have been a lot of Becky Lynch deep dives at pop culture sites, at feminism sites, at mainstream sports sites.
I mean, she's not there yet, but this is like Austin in 96. It's not Austin in 97. She's got to be in
6 months.
Yeah, it's Austin in 96. It's not Austin in 97. It's the way I would describe it.
So the thing is, they're going to main event WrestleMania, and we'll talk about this in a while. There are currently conflicting reports as to whether the match is going to be a triple threat or not.
If they're smart,
the most recent credible report was from Justin Barrasso of Sports Illustrated, who said it will be a singles match and it will go last.
Yeah.
Dave Meltzer reported earlier that as of the time he had gotten the report, it was going to be a triple threat match, and they hadn't decided where it was going to go. But he also said that he expected it to be the main event, and he thought there was a pretty good chance they change it back to a single.
Right.
Although he thinks they shouldn't.
Yeah, Dave has. Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, whatever. It's,
I mean, there's an argument to make it a triple threat, but I don't buy it, basically.
The argument is that you get Charlotte in this huge match, but you split the attention. It's not. Listen, at the end of the day, if the finish is Becky Lynch beating Ronda Rousey in the main event of WrestleMania, it doesn't matter. Like, everything that happens for the next 9 weeks doesn't matter.
Right.
They're not going to screw it up that bad. They try. Go back and watch the first, like, August, September, October of Becky Lynch. Like, they tried to screw this up, like, 8 different times, and they couldn't. They've stopped trying to screw it up because they're not that stupid. But, so, like, the cultural zeitgeist here, like, I would say she's getting there, she's not there yet. The biggest star in wrestling is Ronda Rousey, but it's not because she's a wrestler, it's from when she was a UFC fighter. And, you know, is she a bigger star than, you know, Daniel Bryan and AJ Styles and you know,
Seth maybe Rollins not and Brock Lesnar.
Seth Rollins. Yeah. I would say the two biggest wrestling stars that were created by wrestling and haven't went outside substantially are Becky Lynch and Roman Reigns right now.
Sure.
Because Roman Reigns obviously got, you know, some of his crossing over was due to the leukemia thing, because mm-hmm. that also went very mainstream as a human interest story. But, you know, so... And you can have an interesting discussion about how big of a star Becky Lynch is.
Yeah.
Because there are business metrics that would point you in many, many different directions. Part of the reason it's difficult to say is that WWE is much more... From the period after WWE went public, and when WWE went public, they also released a certain number of years back financial information that right. was very detailed. About 3 years ago, right, is like the network was kind of looking like it might be a failure. They heavily reduced the amount of financial information that they make public. Right. So it's and actually think, much...
Like, what we had in, you know... You're about the same age I am. You know, in the early 2000s, it was the fucking quarter-hour ratings on Nielsen.
You could get minute by minute.
Yeah,
it was
like crazy. Like
now you get hours.
Christopher Robin, Zimmerman, whoever else, breaking down the... Scott Keith breaking down, like, the quarter-hour ratings for... I'm sure Bix and Span was doing it then, too, on the DVDVR message board where he lurked. He didn't lurk. He was all over it. But you know, that was what you looked at. And it's, like, this is just different now.
Right. And it's like,
because you've got like the plus seven ratings, and
you don't know who's driving the house show attendance at the, because they false advertise everything.
Yeah.
So you can't say the house shows
or
are up. The
radio
house shows
ads
are, down.
Are is very different.
Right.
From...
Like they're not advertising those matches. WrestleMania tickets are going anywhere between 2.5 times and 4 times face, and they scaled that big building twice as expensive as they'd ever scaled the WrestleMania before.
Mania is its own beast.
You cannot get into that building right now. When I say the get in the door price, I'm talking about behind the stage in the upper deck right now is $150.
Sure.
And that did spike after people realized that after Becky won the Royal Rumble.
Yeah.
You know, she's selling an enormous amount of t-shirts. We don't know how many t-shirts. We don't know whether she's the number one t-shirt seller, because we don't get that information anymore. But all of a sudden she went from having one t-shirt at a time that they rotated out every 6 months to now she has like 22 of them.
If I pull up WWEshop.com right now, let's see what pulls up.
Oh, they just released a fantastic new one that combines the WrestleMania logo from this year with her, like, the man, like, graphics.
So if you literally pull it up, you've got a... Oh, yeah, there it is. Gear up for WrestleMania. It is her, like, throwing the double Aloha symbol with her goggles and her WrestleMania logo.
Yeah.
I've got the man ones.
Yeah.
With the championship belts and the socks. That's what you got. And
right,
she
I mean,
is
so
what the superstars wear. You've got her, Styles, so, Mysterio, Carmella for
have
some
four
reason.
Rows, they have 4 rows of advertising.
Oh, yeah.
The first row is Becky Lynch the entire way across.
Oh, yeah.
The second row is championship belts, Becky Lynch, Elias, and socks.
Yeah.
The third row is Becky Lynch, AJ Styles, Rey Mysterio, and Carmella.
Yeah.
The fourth row is AJ Styles, Finn Balor, Seth Rollins, and Becky Lynch.
I will say the Becky Lynch WrestleMania t-shirt is pretty good.
It's a nice t-shirt. I would assume getting that.
Yeah.
You know, the rotating ad on the top is, you know, Becky. It's rotating between championship belts, Becky Lynch, and Eddie Guerrero.
Yeah.
They think
so
she's a draw.
It's a thing, Googs. I don't know how to tell you. It's a thing now.
Right. I mean, they think she's a draw.
Yeah.
And they're going to do this because they're losing Ronda Rousey.
Yeah.
And the cultural zeitgeist now is begging for women to be the big star of the company. Like, that is the cultural zeitgeist right now. Like, people want to see a woman that goes out there, kicks everybody's ass, cuts good promos, is a good wrestler, and is exactly what they haven't promoted at the top of their women's stuff since, you know, the 50s. I'll do this rant now.
Go ahead.
People keep saying Becky Lynch is the new Steve Austin. Becky Lynch is not the new Steve Austin. She's the new Becky Lynch. There is no historical precedent for this type of character being at the top of WWE. Are there Stone Cold Steve Austin influences? Yeah, I mean, she's copying some of her speaking style from the face leaning tweener wearing all black with you know, the simple print t-shirt and the leather jackets with logos on the... Yeah, some of it's like, it is copied in some part from Steve Austin, but not, you know, well, lots of people copied from Steve Austin, like, you know, CM Punk copied from Steve Austin too, Goldberg copied from Steve Austin, but this is a unique star. This is the first major star that they have created in, like, the social media era, where social media was like... They've been pushing social media for 8 years now, and they couldn't create anybody, and they finally did. Like, the Twitter and the Instagram is a big part of the character here.
Yeah.
The, you know, the hashtag FOMO, you know, what... When's Becky going to show up? What's Becky going to do when she shows up? But she's not moving... The way she's moving business is very different than the way is essentially ever... John Cena is going to be the last star of that era that moved business in the way that you moved business from the 80s through like the early 2010s. You know, she's probably not a huge ratings driver. One of the reasons she's not going to be a huge ratings driver is because if you don't have to sit through the 3-hour Raw and the 2-hour SmackDown, because they're just going to put her thing up on YouTube the next day and Hulu the next day, and it's going to get millions of hits there.
Right.
So it's different now, and there's aspects that are the same. There's this idea that the Royal Rumble as a live draw was a failure because they only sold 30-something, you know, they sold 30,000 tickets or whatever.
Right.
That building scaled huge. That's going to be a $6 or $7 million gate. It's hard to say exactly what drew that, but I bet you a lot of those tickets were sold under the expectation that Becky Lynch would win the Royal Rumble.
Sure. It's like the audience now... Because it's fractured so much since, like, the Attitude Era, there's a larger percentage of the audience that's extremely online, a larger percent of the audience that's observer subscribers, just by sort of the nature of it. And that's, like, they want that information is available to them.
Or you know, listens, not even observer subscribers, but people that listen to, like, the Conrad Thompson podcasts or read, like, David Shoemaker on The Ringer. Or, you know, read Up Rocks or read Bix's stuff on Deadspin. Like, there's a much larger awareness. But, like, again, like, Becky's stuff has made it into, like, Mel Magazine and, like, the like Pop Sugar and, like, those kinds of places, which are the equivalent of, you know, where, say, John Cena would have showed up in 2005 or 2006. And there's, you know, how much of the Royal Rumble did you see?
I didn't watch the Royal Rumble because, as we've discussed on this show regularly,
right? But you saw the video clips of
Went on YouTube, yes, and yeah, sure.
Events that happened,
yes.
So that's my point. You know,
I saw Becky Lynch winning to the Titanic music, which was poorly timed as a video editor by trade.
Yes, although it was a pretty good idea.
Yeah, it was a good idea. Yeah.
Yeah. So the Royal Rumble was a 6-hour and 55-minute wrestling
too
show.
Too long for anything. Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it's tough to do the 6-hour and 50, and WrestleMania is going to be 7.5 hours.
Yeah, no, it's not. It's too long. Make it by half.
Yeah, I can do that one.
Does not need to be that long. You're doing that. I'm not doing that.
Yeah, but, you know, there were parts of the Royal Rumble that were, like, really... really great. It would have been much better if our show. You could have cut, But, like, the Asuka-Becky Lynch match was really great. And there were people really complaining that Becky lost by submission in that match. And completely missing the point that it just didn't matter, like, at all.
Yeah.
And it was good for Asuka. And you know
yes,
what?
Yes, it was very good for Asuka, who you might remember.
Back Becky and Asuka at SummerSlam yeah. or Survivor Series or next year's WrestleMania or somewhere, and they'll be able to play off that. And it's not like, you know, she got out of her move a bunch of times, and then Asuka won with essentially a cross-faced chicken wing version of cattle mutilation.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was really good. You know, Finn Balor and Brock Lesnar was really good. The last 20 minutes of the Women's Royal Rumble were really good. The first 50 minutes of the Women's Royal Rumble were, like, the worst battle royal in the history of the world.
Yeah.
It was bad. So they stacked all, like, the good workers at the back, and it was just, like, it was, like, a constant. The first Women's Royal Rumble, the 2018 one.
Yeah.
They put Sasha and Becky in at 1 and 2 and had them go pretty much the entire way. So the entire match layout, and they've done this in the Men's Rumble a lot. The entire match layout was somebody would come in, they'd do their spots with Sasha and Becky, and they'd get thrown out, or somebody else would come in. Here, they put the two people in those roles, Lacey Evans and Natalya, and it just didn't work. Like, everything was blown. And they didn't bring in more good workers until, like, after the halfway point. At which point, you know, Charlotte came in at, like, 12 or whatever and kind of kept it together from there. Sure. But, like, they stacked all the big stars.
I mean, 2018, they used a lot of, the nostalgia pop divas, yeah. too. They really couldn't do this year, so. I mean, right. you think they have the workers at this point to make it a good match, but.
Right, but it wasn't laid out well. Yeah. And the men's rumble was also, the men's rumble was just, like, nothing. And so one of the problems here, which is another Becky Lynch-related problem, is that when you bring out Becky Lynch in the middle of the show, like, nobody gives a fuck about anything that happens after it.
Yeah.
The Daniel Bryan, AJ, imagine this 5 years ago. The Daniel Bryan, AJ Lynch blow off to a AJ major Styles. World title program. People used it as the piss break match after Becky yeah, won the Rumble.
They did.
The piss break match. It was in the old Divas Division piss break spot. Where they went out, they had a mediocre match that nobody cared about, and half the crowd wasn't even watching, and they went home. And Big Red Eric Rowan is now live with Daniel Bryan. Because
sure,
that's a
why thing. Not?
Why not? Because Daniel Bryan needs a muscle guy.
God bless
but him. that's when you know you have, like, a major rising star is when the crowd, like, really only gives a shit about this one person. Like, they could not, that crowd did not give a fuck about Seth Rollins winning the Royal Rumble. They just did.
Yeah.
The only two things, they cared about three things on the entire show. They cared about the Becky Asuka match, they cared about the Royal Rumble after Nia Jax came in, mm-hmm. and they cared about Balor versus Lesnar.
Yeah.
And that was it.
Yep.
And, you know, I kind of think they should have put Balor over here.
I mean, I can't just have strong. I think I have strong feelings about this in 2019, about anything WWE does, so.
What's the end game of Lesnar? What, he's going to lose the curb stomp at WrestleMania? Woohoo. Seth Rollins is cold right now.
Sure.
What, they're going to put him over again at WrestleMania and stretch this out again until SummerSlam?
I mean, what's, like, the follow-up for Rollins? I mean, we should probably talk about here about Ambrose not renewing his contract.
Yeah, I mean, so there's Dean Ambrose is gone. I don't know if he's going to make some more appearances, but he's done at the end of April. There's a lot of rumors that he may be going to All Elite. This is all going to be announced at the Double or Nothing show, but, you know, 99% All Elite's signed Kenny Omega, Phoenix, and Pentagon.
Yeah.
You know, and all of a sudden, you know, maybe Dean's just taking some time off.
Sure.
Maybe he's going to show up in GCW and wrestle death matches with Nick Cage. He's a weird dude.
He is a weird dude.
Yeah. too. So it's made a lot of money. And they offered him a lot of money to stay. And AJ Styles hasn't re-signed yet either. Now it's expected that he's going to re-sign, but that can go different ways. It's...
I mean, I'm sure he is texting the Young Bucks to see what's the deal is there, so...
Right. You know, it's a different time. I'm sure we'll talk about what, you know, we're going to get some match announcements for Double or Nothing this week. Tickets are going to go on sale relatively soon, too. And, you know, maybe a TV deal might be coming.
Yeah.
A lot of rumors about big name channels involved. Not, you know, they ain't going to end up on Pop TV or Destination Earth, folks. Yeah. You know, major channels. And what does that mean?
I don't know, man.
I don't know. Yeah. Again, like I have said this for probably 2 years now, maybe even more. But this is the best time to be a wrestling fan in the history of this. You know, even if WWE is not your cup of tea. But if WWE is your cup of tea, in a lot of ways, WWE right now is hotter in terms of the top storylines and the top characters than it's been in a really long time. Mm-hmm. Everything below that's a pile of shit. but NXT is really hot again. Now they're doing a halftime heat again. They're putting an NXT match on it.
Yep.
It's not a main roster match. It's an NXT match. You know, New Japan is, you know, New Japan's about to run the garden.
Yeah, we're going to be there. That.
Yeah, we're going to that. That's a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
That's like something that everybody just forgot about. Yeah, I don't know what match are running on top. It's going to be interesting. They should run Okada and Tanahashi.
They should.
They're going to end up running, like, Switchblade Jay White versus... I have a weird feeling they're going to end up running Jay White and Okada.
Yeah.
I have a weird feeling Jay White's about to win the IWGP title.
Yeah, might be.
I think that would be a mistake.
Yeah, we'll see.
I've said that before.
Yeah.
It hasn't been.
Mm.
But... You know, it's going to be a big show, and it's going to be big matches on it. It's going to have, like, you know, the Jay Lethal ROH title defense that nobody cares about. Jay Lethal versus Matt Taven.
Oh, boy.
That's the match they're building.
Yeah, second match on, that's fine.
No, it's going to be the co-main.
That's probably not a good idea. Because if we're going to be there, it's not great.
Yeah, it's going to be the co-main is the problem. And, you know, all Elite's firing up in May, and, G1 Night 1 is in America this year.
Yeah.
Look at the WrestleMania weekend schedule.
Oh, you sent it to me.
Right. I mean, well, no, I just sent you our planned WrestleMania weekend schedule. You look at the entire thing, and it's going through, it's starting on Wednesday and going to Monday this year. Like, 3 years ago, it started on Friday and went to Sunday. A couple of years ago, it expanded into Thursday. It's expanding into Wednesday and Monday this year.
It's a good time if you're a wrestling fan. Yeah. Let's, maybe good time if you're a Mets fan. I don't know. We'll explore this further on coming editions. Probably even starting next week, once pitchers and catchers report. On another edition. For all you kids out there.